Station number 14981, William Cornell, Reel 3.
Mr. Cornell, Reel 3, you were telling me about your time and experiences in the South, at South Shields.
Yes, well, as I said, it was quite an enjoyable period of time. It didn't last all that long, but as I said, we were still sleeping on the floor in the palliasses, but at least we were undercover in the school rooms, because the school had been took over by the army for that purpose. And whereas during the daytime we had all our drills and all the rest of it, group marches got longer and things like that, but our leisure time was very enjoyable, as we had time off, and the local people of South Shields had accepted us, and we were invited to dances and things like that. There was the cinemas and things like that to go to, so it was really quite an enjoyable time. There was during that period, I think there was one minor occurrence at that time. Some German bombers, or a German bomber, I can't remember which, came over, and I think they dropped one bomb somewhere on South Shields, but I never saw the results of it. But our lifetime was quite happy.
Discipline now will be much, much stronger.
Oh, yes.
And they'd be chasing you, were they?
Yes, oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And were you finding this okay? You could cope with this?
I had no problems whatsoever, apart from one thing which happened to me at South Shields, and this goes back to the physical examination, when I first joined the DA, I started having this pain in my groin, and reported sick, and the army medical officer, he said I had a hernia, so I was put into on a truck and sent to Durham Hospital, and I had the operation for the hernia. And after I came out of hospital, in them days a hernia was a serious operation, and you weren't allowed to use, I was put on what you call light duties for 3 months before you marked A1 again. That was for the stitching and after hail. And that 3 months, he gave me a job which I didn't like one little bit, and that was, he gave me batman, a job as batman to an officer. And that was one part of my life I absolutely hated, being at the beck and call of an officer who was a proper la-di-da-da, and you know, just like a lapdog to him.
Who was the officer?
Time again, I can't remember. I can picture him, that's his face, and know his behaviour, a proper snob. And he had to take his morning tea and all the rest of it. And he wanted to know what the weather was like outside and all the rest of it. And he was quite like a dog, actually. And he was supposed to pay you, on top of your army pay, out of his own money. He was supposed to, I think it was 1 6 a week, but this one I had, he never used to pay. He was a proper twerp and he wouldn't pay, so I never got that 1 6 at all. However, came the day 3 months later, and back to the MO, he, how do you feel? And I said, I'm absolutely champion, I'm as fit as a fiddle. And so I was marked A1 again, and I was back to Dorval again, and was I pleased.
So you went back to your platoon?
Yes, that was in, that's right, in the same barracks, the same place and everything. Life resumed as normal.
What time would this, what date would this be?
Well, we are talking about, it was all of the winter of 39 and 40, that's when it would be. And from there, I think Dunkirk occurred, and immediately after Dunkirk, we as the 10th Battalion were put on train. We entrained and we went down to Devon, to a place called Dawlish Warren. And our particular duties were then was this lined up and down the beach in case of invasion precautions.
The 10th Battalion had been to France?
No, 6th Battalion had been to France. 10th Battalion hadn't. The 6th Battalion had. But the 10th Battalion was formed
Out of the six.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm.
Had any changes been made in the battalion between the time that you'd gone into your illness and got over?
Well, as we never got back to the 6th Battalion. I did actually request to go, because by that time what was left of the 6th Battalion had came back from France, had escaped from Dunkirk, and they were reforming it. And I had specifically asked to return to my regiment, which I joined up into, in my battalion. But that was turned down, and with a lot more, and the 10th Battalion kept its nature from then on.
On the beaches, what were you doing?
Our job was purely and simply to wait for the Germans coming ashore and shoot them, which we never did. We never saw them. But
were you building defences?
We had scares, and I remember one little at the back of my mind, it was there was one lone house not from far from where we were at our positions on the beach, and a spy was caught in signalling to the Germans across in France, and he was arrested, not by me, I had nothing to do with it whatsoever, but we knew all about it in the battalion. He was arrested and taken away, and as far as we know, he was executed in the Tower of London.
Was he British or German extraction?
He was British, I think he was. That was the story. So we never saw him. I never saw him. But that was just the story of what had happened.
Were you digging trenches and defences?
Well, we had barricades and shelters and barbed wire and stuff like that. We weren't actually in the sand. We were on the banks, actually, high, a little bit higher up than the beach. And then there was the dannet wire, the wire all along the beach, and we were on the banks. And we were dug into trenches along the bank.
What were your living conditions?
Weren't so good. As I say, you were in the trenches, but you basically, a little bit farther back behind where you took your turns, you had duties like, it was like guard duty, which is namely as 2 hours on and 4 hours off. And that was regardless of the time of day or night. But when you weren't off duty, you lived a little bit farther back, and we had bell tents, where 20 men sleeping in a bell tent, with all your feet up to the pole in the middle. So imagine it was like anybody coming in drunk later at night, and 19 men already, you had to step over them to get to his place.
So you were in a defensive situation.
Mm-hmm.
Could you take me through a typical day on those beaches,
yes,
from Rivali onwards?
Well, you had your training just the same as ever, but the most important part of your day was your duty, your guard duties. And this was on a complete rotor system. And when you were duty, you had to man the trenches, your eyes had to be up time, you were looking for what was expected that time, that was the invasion. Looking back, we could never have stopped anything. All we had was the heaviest gun we had was the Bren gun. And obviously against tanks or anyone came up and bitch, it had been absolutely hopeless, but nobody seemed to know at that time. But as I say, life was quite good, and when the threat did diminish, later we were there, we moved about, we changed position with other formations a little bit, so there was a little bit of variety. But it was mostly all in the county of Devon. And then when the square, it's more or less, it hadn't gone altogether, but it was diminished, we moved into a permanent tented camp at Okehampton in Devon. And again, they were enjoyable days again.
The you say there were scares. What form did they take? What kind of scares?
Well,
were you getting?
We did say quite a few German planes came over and things like that, and we saw the occasional dogfight with the Hurricanes and Spitfires. They were mostly Hurricanes rather than the Spitfires at them times, and we saw you know, it was a cheer if we saw a German one shot down, things like that. Actually, I never had a shot fired at me at all in that time. Well, we saw the fighter planes and all the rest of it, and we saw them bailing out and planes crashing, things like that. Nobody actually fired at us. There was one particular case, that was at Okehampton, in the tented camp, where I heard this noise, and I recognised it's the unsynchronised sound of the German bomber, and I looked up. And at no height whatsoever was a Messerschmitt 1010. And you see the German markings on it quite clearly. So obviously all he was doing, he never fired, but obviously he zoomed straight up again at the clowns. He was obviously targeting our camp when, you know, he came down to have a look see. But nothing came of that, unfortunately, so that was all right. But the Germans, sticks in my mind, there's a German plane right overhead and quite low down.
Did the equipment and weaponry improve over the course of time?
Well, it couldn't improve because we just didn't have it, did we? In the battalion, you had no tanks. You had what was called a Bren gun carrier, which was a glorified little armoured car thing, open top like. They've carried on through the war. It's some valuable work, actually, because I think it was only quarter of an inch armour plate they had, which would stop a rifle bullet, but that was about all mine. It wouldn't stop much more. But they were used for various purposes, humping ammunition and stuff like that, and they were quite a versatile machine.
What was your role? What were you doing?
My role, I was purely an infantryman. I was purely and simply an infantryman soldier at that particular time. And that was a rifleman, you called a rifleman.
Which company were you in?
Yes, I was in C Company in them days. Mm-hmm. But my weapon at that time was the Shortley Enfield rifle. There was another rifle came out at the same time. I think it was called the P-17. But it had a different shaped barrel altogether. And whereas some of them were sealed, I preferred the one I knew, which was the Shortley Enfield. It fired a magazine of 5 rounds of 303 ammunition.
Did you get much chance to have leisure activities
in
the area?
Yes, yes. Once the scares, as I said before, once that diminished, that threat of the invasion, it was quite an enjoyable period. We had our free time. Just a touch of humour, I can remember one. These sort of things stick out in your life and you never forget them. One day we were given 24 hours off duty. So me and my friend, this was a boy called Tommy Pennick from Spennymower, decided we'd go from Okehampton to Plymouth. We had no means of getting there, but we decided we'd go and have a day at Plymouth. And so we set off outside the camp, and two or three cars went past. From them days, people used to stop. Eventually, this great big limousine pulled up and stopped. And Tuff says, "Where are you two soldiers wanting to go to?" I said, "Well, we're going to Plymouth." And he's jumping, he says, "My chauffeur and I'll take you to Plymouth." And this they did. And actually, in the car, part of his conversation, which I remember, was he says, "Can you remember what your family as children were brought up on? What kind of milk?" I says, "Yes, Cowangate." He says, "Well, I'm Mr. Cowangate." He says, "That's my firm." However, he took us to Plymouth and we had a really fantastic day. But unfortunately, we went to a dance and we'd had a few beers and time went on and we forgot about going back to Okehampton and how we were going to get back to Okehampton, which was, I think it was about 29 miles away. So this was it. We had no hope of getting back before Reveille. We thought this was about 10 o'clock on the night previous, so we... However, we had no alternative. We set off to walk, but it was black dark and night time. And we walked from Plymouth to Okehampton. I remember going past in the dark. I remember we could see Dartmoor Prison, so we weren't far from there. Little did we know we might have been in there the way when we got back to the battalion, but never mind. We carried on, and we came through a hole in the fence, and we got into the tented camp at about 5:45. Now, in those days, the valley was at 6 o'clock. And when the bugle went for Reveille, believe me, we weren't in any state to go on parade after walking 26 miles through the night. It was a strange country. So we both decided there's only one way out. We'd report sick. So this we did. And by some stroke of luck, we got away with it. So we were given some pills, and that was that. But we weren't charged, so we got away with it on that occasion. So that was a little bit of light relief.
What kind of punishments were meted out for wrongdoing in the battalion? What kind of punishments might you receive?
Oh, well, punishment now. Now, the punishment side of an infantry battalion was very, very strict and took the form of dependent on the crime, the seriousness of the crime is what the punishment was. For minor punishment, you just sometimes got a few days CB. That meant confined to barracks. You weren't allowed your leisure time out of camp and things like that. Of course, on these duties, you had what you call jankers, which was duties which you had to do. This was all in addition to your normal training. This was in your leisure time. Things like cookhouse duties, peeling spuds and various things like that. And then other punishments were you could have your wages stopped for certain crimes, more serious crimes. You were tried by the office commanding, then could be sent to the prison jails, which were nicknamed the glass houses at various places in England. The famous one at Bellini in Glasgow, and the one down in the south of England was called Shepton Mallet. I managed to keep out of both of those, so that was that.
You mentioned doing guard duties. Were you paraded for these duties?
Where were what?
Guard duties. Were you, you mentioned doing guard duties. Yes. Were you paraded for them?
Yes, it was a special... for guard duty, when it was your turn for guard duty, you know, your name was posted upon orders. Now, that was one of the biggest crimes in the army, was not to read these orders every day. Because your name could be on it for some space, you don't know. But it was down for guard duties. You have to get everything spit and polished, your blanc going done to your weapon equipment, creases in your trousers, you have to be clean shaven, and you were inspected and examined, and you were given punishment if you weren't right. But you had to be prepared for guard duty. And it was a proper ceremony, it was guard drill, what you called then. At that time, you went into the position as the group. And then you took your turn at going onto the duty, wherever the duty point might be. It might have been on a main gate, or it might have been on an important building, anything like that. But the duty, you did 2 hours duty on, and then you were allowed 4 hours off. Now, this went on for 24 hours. Then that was the end of your guard duty for that time. And some other unfortunate people would take over from them.
After a 24-hour guard duty, were you allowed time to rest?
You were actually. I think it was 2 hours, that was all you were allowed. I think I might be wrong, but I think it was 2 hours you were allowed. And that was 2 hours where you could lay down on your bed actually for 2 hours. But it was a short period of time, but after that you were back to normal.
Keeping your uniform clean and pressed, mm-hmm. and living in tents, how mm-hmm. did you do that?
Well, your trousers, like what you did was, you had a ground shade. You laid the ground shade on the floor. You laid your trousers out, and then you put your palliasse on the top of that. And you waited for your body. That was how you ironed your trousers. The blanco, and you had these cakes of blanco and water. You had to have a small scrubbing brush. You scrubbed your webbing equipment and blanco to get the colour. In our case, it was always a light khaki colour.
Were there any other guard duties or picket duties that you had to do?
Oh, yes, you had... guard duty was the main one, but on top of that, you had what you called picket duties. Now, there was various kinds of picket duties. There was what you call a fire picket. That meant you were on a fire watch rather than guarding anything. You were looking for fire starting and to report things like that. And most of them, you never carried a rifle, but you had a stick. That was all, what you call a stick picket. And... that was one of your duties. It was mostly for fire duties and like precautions like that.
Whilst in Devon, did the usual procedure go on? Did you have PE, sport, and so on?
Uh-huh. And actually, at that time, we were starting to get our leaves for home. Because up till then, we'd never been home since we left. And this is well on in, whereas we'd left home in 1939. This would be somewhere near the autumn of 1940, where we talk about, or even later than that, when we had our first leave. And we were granted leave of 7 days. And that was, you were taken to the station, you were given a warrant, and that got you onto the train and got you home. And you had 7 days to get back to that camp.
How did your family and friends receive you on the leave?
Oh, but the old joke, and it probably still applies, the first thing anybody asks in them days, when do you go back? This was even on your first day. but that part of the shop.
Dunkirk had gone then, which was a disaster. How was, did you find the civilians and your family taking a bad time in the war? Were the thoughts of defeat or worries and concerns?
Well, early days, there was the rationing was becoming more of a burden. But I can't remember my mother and father being particularly daunted by it. They suffered the minor discomforts, obviously, but where we lived, we had no air raids or nothing like that, so basically it wasn't too bad.
They weren't concerned that you may well be drawn into action at any time?
They probably were, but they wouldn't show it, of course. They wouldn't show it. It was a happy time, really, rather than a hurtful time. It was a happy time.
As a soldier and war on, and you were home on your first leave, were your friends happy to see you? And were you getting into the socialising bit?
Marvellous. Went back to our usual haunts, the dance halls, and met our old girlfriends and things like that. And happy days. Mm-hmm.
You would see young men of your age who weren't in the army. How did you feel about those people?
It didn't worry me one little bit. I never thought badly of them. I was absolutely not concerned whatsoever about them. Because there was a lot of them, because obviously the miners were, they weren't conscripted in any case, the miners. Because I was living in a mining area, so really it didn't worry me one little bit, because my father had been a miner all his life.
Back into the army situation again, you've mentioned dancers and the female company. That would be lacking, was it, to a degree in the army, and how did you feel about that?
About what? About
having a girlfriend or meeting girls?
You met girls and you met boys, you met men, just life went on, there was no problems whatsoever. Obviously the first thing you tried to was get yourself a girlfriend, like wherever you went though.
Did you succeed?
But I have to drink in them, as most soldiers did, like, so you're more concerned with having a drink and things like that, of course, and you always had the towns where you went to, or the village, whatever. They generally had a YMCA, where you could always get a meal, such as it was, spam and stuff like that, spam fritters, things like that. The bigger camps had a naffy and things like that. And most churches had halls which were open to all hours for you to stay in. I became a table tennis, I will come what may.
When you moved off the beaches and deeper into Devon, did the routine change then?
Well, it changed as regards, you didn't have the continual guard duties which you'd had, but you had your normal camp guards and things like that, which... But in other words, you didn't do them quite as frequently because they were more spread out and it was more meant to take them on and fewer needed. So it was, you did some hard training, you had some very hard training. Route marches got longer and the PT exercises got harder and harder all the time. So really it was tough training, but at that age you're fitting well and you lap it all up.
Did you get involved in manoeuvres?
Yes. We had... In them days, they were just coming on to that, what was later called the battle drill for an infantry battalion. And it was a set piece of manoeuvre which was hammered into you day after day after day. And that was an attack. How you were going to make this attack, the various positions you took up, where the 2-inch mortar went, where it gave cover and fire from, and the movement, the flanking movement, everything involved with that was a set pattern. It was drummed into you time and again. And if this was an attack on a position, this was the manoeuvre you would use. No freelance work yet. You stuck by this, come what may.
Was that manoeuvre in the attack, was it a formal advance with bayonets fixed across open ground?
There was no retreat. She went as down.
It was very much similar to what you had been doing in the First World War.
Yes, exactly it was. But it was a battle drill. It was a drill, a specific drill. How to take an enemy position of approximately the same size as you, the attacking group, were. Platoon against platoon, right.
Do you recall how that was done?
Yes, well, you lined up what you call the start point, that you were out of sight of the enemy, but you had them under observation, you knew where they were. Now, at that time, you came in, your left and your right flank groups, so we split up into attacking groups, and the left flank would go out round to the left, still keeping out of sight, of course, the right one go out of the sight. Now, in the meantime, the 2-inch mortar man and the Bren gunner would take up positions so they could actually fire on the opposing platoon or whatever. Now, the mortar would launch an attack on the position. And then, as the time got nearer for the actual attack to go in, which was all done to timing, you would change the smoke in the mortar, smoke bombs instead of explosive bombs, and you would lay down this smoke screen at either side of the position, and at that type of particular time, the two flanking units would come in to take the position.
And was this the drill at those early stages of the war?
Well, it was in the 1940s we're talking about, roundabout. Mm. It was compared for you, this particular drill, and what was hammered into you, this was called battle drill, and it was hammered into you, that particular drill.
Did your manoeuvres take you out into the area over a number of days?
Oh yes, it was quite common that it didn't last one day. You would go into these manoeuvres and 2 and 3 days and 4 and 5. Some of the biggest games lasted even a full week and more. But the smaller ones, 2 or 3 days, and where you lived under actual battle conditions at that time, with your haversack rations and things like that. And no pallets to sleep on, things like that.
Do any one of those stand out in your mind in Devon?
Well, as I say, Devon's a nice county, and coming from a pit area where I'd lived from, in County Durham, it was like another world, and really I did enjoy moving about, especially away from the towns and villages into the countryside where we did these manoeuvres, because I was very observant of the nature life, the birds and the bees and the flowers and the wildlife and everything else. So that's the thing what struck me mostly about Devon in those days.
How long were you in Devon?
I think I must have been a full year, practically a full year, because what had happened then back home, letters from home, got grimmer and grimmer because my father's health was deteriorating. And at that time there was no talking of invasions or nothing like that. But I was particularly worried about my mother being at home with my father. And of course I had 3 brothers apart from myself and we were all in the forces. However, my father did unfortunately die in that particular time, and my eldest brother, he obtained his release from the army, which was permissible in those days. You could apply for release for the eldest one to go home and look after the mother in our this case, and this is what happened with that. And your father and your mother, for that, both of the parents, you know, to lose one was a terrible blow. And I felt it as such, no doubt about that. And whereas a little bit devil may care came home to me then, that apart from the war, life could be difficult in other ways as well. And
Did the army show any sympathy to your problem?
I had 7 days leave to attend the funeral and to make your plans with your mother and father. I had 7 days leave.
How was the news given to you that your father had died? How was the news given to you that your father had died?
By the company commander, actually. He'd called me into the office and explained that he'd had a telegram from the local policeman at Prairie Hill to say that this was the quickest way of getting through, because there was radio communication, to say that my father had died, which I was half expecting, but nevertheless it was still a blow. And then, well, after that, for that particular time, I didn't seem to care what happened to me for a time. And actually, they asked for volunteers at that time, for people who could ride a motorcycle. Well, that was one of my hobbies back home. And I had my first motorbike long before I was old enough to get a license. And so I applied and was accepted, and happy days again. And believe it or not, I was given not an army motorbike, but a practically brand new civilian Royal Enfield, which was called the Silver Bullet, which is a very expensive machine in MDS. And so in this motorcycle platoon, which it was formed, I had a good time to do it. And then from then, I got the chance, I was asked if I would like to volunteer, or in other words, if I didn't volunteer, they'd have still made me go, but never mind. I volunteered for a job as a group dispatch rider in a new thing which they were setting up called a traffic control company.
Was this still part of the battalion?
I was on the verge of leaving the battalion at this stage. The motorcycle platoon was in the battalion. But if I joined this traffic control company with my experience in the motorcycle, which we were looking for, I would leave the battalion as such, but I would only be loaned out. In other words, I would still wear the daylight cap badge and everything else in this traffic control company, whereas the company was actually a part of the military police, which is what we didn't like at all. But however, we were allowed to wear our own cap badges, and so that was fine. Now, the duties were...
Before we go on the duties, when was this?
But guessing I would say we must be talking about nearly into 42. 42 to 43, I think we're talking about. Somewhere in that age, maybe a little before, but near as I can remember, 42.
So between late 40 to 42, you were still in... Where were you? Were still in Devon?
Yes, still in Devon. Still in Devon. Yes, that was right.
And still with your battalion, the 10th?
Yes, that's right. Well, as I say, this traffic code... Now, I was accepted for this job, and I looked forward to it, actually, because it was a motorcycle right up my street, and they were posted to... Salisbury in Wiltshire, which was the headquarters of this new group, which was formed as a brand new thing, so there was quite a bit of excitement involved, and new type of training and all this sort of thing.